And am I in 10% behind and didn't advance one? It was of the Lord that came unto Jeremiah from the Lord in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, saying, go unto the house of the Rechabites, and speak unto them, and bring them into the house of the Lord, unto one of the chambers, and give them wine to drink. Verse 6, but they said, we will drink no wine. For Jonadab, the son of Rahab, her father, commanded us, saying, ye shall drink no wine, neither ye nor your sons forever. Neither shall ye build an house, nor sow sheep, nor plant vineyards, nor have any. But all your days ye shall dwell in tents, that ye may live many days in the land where ye be strangers. Thus have we obeyed the voice of Jonadab, the son of Rahab, our father. Although he hath charged us to drink no wine all our days, we, our wives, our sons, nor our daughters, nor to build houses for us to dwell in, neither have we vineyard, nor field, nor sheep. But we have dwelt in tents, and have obeyed, and done according to all that Jonadab, our father, commanded us. But it came to pass, when Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up into the land, that we said, come, let us go to Jerusalem for fear of the army of the Chaldeans, and for fear of the army of the Syrians, so we dwelt at Jerusalem. Then came the word of the Lord unto Jeremiah, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, go and tell the men of Judah, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, will ye not receive instruction to hearken to my word, saith the Lord? The words of Jonadab the son of Rechab, that he commanded his sons not to drink wine, are performed. For unto this day they drink none, but obey their father's commandment. Notwithstanding I have spoken unto you, rising early and speaking, but you hearken not unto me. I have sent also unto you all my servants the prophets, rising up early and sending them, saying, return ye now every man from his evil way and amend his doing, and go not after the other gods to serve them. And ye shall dwell in the lands which I have given to you and to your fathers, but ye have not inclined your ears, nor hearkened unto me, because the sons of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, have performed the commandment of their father, which he commanded them, but this people have not hearkened unto me. Therefore, thus saith the Lord God of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will bring upon Judah and upon all the inhabitants of Jerusalem all the evil that I have pronounced against them, because I have spoken unto them. But they have not heard, and I have called them, but they have not answered. And Jeremiah said unto the house of the Rechabites, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, because ye have obeyed the commandment of Jonadab your father, and have kept all his precepts, and done according to all that he hath commanded you. Therefore thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Jonadab the son of Rechab shall not want a man to stand before me forever. May the Lord bless the reading. I would like this evening, by the help of the Lord and by the help of his gracious Holy Spirit, to try and interest you in this very special and remarkable passage of the Word of God. It is right there in the middle of Jeremiah's prophecy and ministry, and how that with great heart and deep compassion he longs to bring his people back again unto the Lord. The passage, of course, shows to us that the Rechabites were no ordinary people. They were very ordinary in the sense that they had nothing in this life. They had no vineyard, and they had no house, and they had no land, and I'm sure they had very few friends. But in these people we see a great response to obedience to Jonadab, their father. There is a strong possibility that they came out of jail. You remember Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite, and of course from that nomadic, seemingly gypsy type of people, we find the tribe of the Rechabites have come forward. And over 300 years, They have been able to keep the word of their father. Now this is a very remarkable thing, and the Lord is going to use this by Jeremiah to chastise and to bring to notice God's appeal upon them. You know, in life, you'll find that these dear people have no friends in Jerusalem at all. That is, there's no one to speak for them. And it would seem that they just lurched about the walls or inside the gates of the city of Jerusalem because of the fear of the oncoming Chaldean army. But, you know, these people have brought into the chamber of the house of the Lord, and there they're asked by Jeremiah the prophet in the temple, they're asked to drink wine. The thing that they never had done, and the thing that their parents had taught them not to do. And yet here is the thing that they're faced with, this great dilemma in their life. I want you to see too that amongst these people, the poorest of people, and the most nomadic of people, that they had that conviction in their soul to do the right thing by their father. Now I wish to draw these things to your notice, and I want to try and encourage everyone who may be in that position, one way or another, where they have to refuse. You know, in the present day in which we live, to refuse, or be a sort of refusenik, is something that is taken to be a crank or odd, or something like that. But we do wish everyone to understand that some of the best people that have ever graced this world and blessed the Bible, we find that they too were put in positions where they had to make up their mind. You know, sometimes by one decision, and sometimes just by one action, we either fail or we grow greater in the ways of our God. I was thinking particularly of some of the trials of the Lord's people, and in the present time, I was thinking about Abraham refusing the king of Sodom. I was thinking of the great exercise that he had to recover Lot. And at the end of that most successful experience, remember he had ministry from Melchizedek to strengthen him to be able to refuse the offer of the king of Sodom. And why I'm saying that is because there is none of us shall stand, and there is none of us shall make progress unless the Lord aid us, and unless the ministry of Christ be made over and good to us, we'll not be able to stand. You remember the offer, of course, none could calculate what the offer was that day with all the goods and all the glory and treasure of the nations, the five kings. You remember it was all laid before him. And just with one decision, he didn't need to make two decisions. And he never needed to look twice. He just turned his back upon the things of Sodom. Now these are very serious things, things that impede our progress, or things that we have to make up our mind about. We've got to make sure, remember his words, he was so definite about it, and he wasn't embarrassed by the king of Sodom's face. You remember he said that he wouldn't take from a thread to a shoe latchet whatever belonged to the king of Sodom, lest, he said, he had made Abraham rich. We remember that he was able to do that because he had been ministered to by Melchizedek. And he had lifted up his hand to the Most High God. And what a beautiful thing it was that he had ministry before the great trial came upon himself. I was struck also in my private reading to notice once that Jacob refused other people's comfort. That is that you remember when he thought that Joseph was altogether lost. You remember his sons and his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he would not be comforted. You know, he didn't know the whole truth about his boy, and he didn't know the whole effect that was going to come to pass. But there's one thing he knew, he couldn't take comfort from people like his own sons. You remember that they had taken the garment and had slain the kid and had put blood upon it. And they didn't say that this was their brother's blood, but they made their old father say, "It is my son." But irrespective of how far he had gone in his despair and disappointment, he did not want the comfort of men like his own sons. So he refused to be comforted by them. There are times when we learn to refuse certain matters. We remember that we need to come to Hebrews 11 to understand that Moses refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. That is, that he was not prepared to take upon him an Egyptian title. That is, he would not take upon him a worldly name. His heart was set upon the people of God. Many and varied would be his troubles and trials through life's journey. But he had made up his mind, and he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. You remember, too, when Elijah the prophet is offered the golden garments of Naaman. Remember, too, that I'm sure there was great need in the prophet's house. And I'm sure there was great need always there among the sons of the prophets. And when Naaman pressed him to take the talents and to take the garments, we read these words, but he refused. He was so insistent that he would refuse. You remember, he wanted to give to that man from Syria. He wanted to give him a right impression of God. And that's so very, very important in our dealings and in our ways, that we try to give a proper representation of God. When we come, before we come to these Rechabites, we'll find our people in more straitened circumstances than we could ever imagine. In the 137th Psalm, there we read concerning the captives that lay down in Babylon. And you could hardly get people in more straitened circumstances than they were in. But they too refused. You remember, they were requested to sing us one of the songs of Zion. And you remember the words that were so blessed and so sweet to every exile. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? What they were saying was, we have fallen foul and fallen far enough, but we won't fall to the state of singing for the sake of entertaining these Babylonians. Oh, they refused irrespective of the outcome that was involved. You know, what we're going to look at this evening is these Rechabites and their refusal of the wine. You know, when the city at this time, when they did come into the city, there would be many, many people in this city. That is, that all the nomadic tribes in and around Israel and all Palestine would find their way to the city for safety. And possibly that is the basic reason for the Rechabites being in the city of Jerusalem. Of course, you know, they must have looked beyond all the other kinds of people that were there. They must have looked stranger than all the rest. You know, there would be a something about them, because generally everyone in that city had interest in all the things that they had no interest in. Everyone had an interest in wine. Everyone had an interest in houses. Everyone had an interest in sowing seed. Everyone had no interest in tents. But that was their interest. That was their life, and thus they must have stood out to be different from all the others that were there. You know, when you first got a look at these rather nomadic and austere people, you would think at first that they were not principled at all. You would think that irrespective of what they could get, they would take. For generally, that would be true concerning these nomadic nations.
But although they did look the way they did, they were an austere people, but they were a principled people as well. There are things that they just would not do. You know, these people must have felt and found it awkward. They possibly had never lived behind a wall before. They had possibly never lived in a community like this before, had possibly never had to share place or water or food or anything with anyone else before. And so it was rather a restrictive experience. You know, sometimes among the Lord's people, they too are brought into restricted circumstances, brought by circumstances to live in limits that they did not and would not and possibly would never have dreamed of. But they're brought into these circumstances. And how they behave in these circumstances and how they overcome in these circumstances is something that is beautiful to see. And so we're going to look at the purpose of the narrative. We see that the purpose of the narrative that God lifted up, he's going to use a very ordinary, poor, poverty-stricken tribe to show to the nation of Judah that life is not involved with things, that happiness is not in outward things, that you can live without the wine, that you can live without the sowing and reaping, that you can live without a house, that you can live without things. Now I know that we all need things. That's not what I'm saying tonight. But what I am saying is this, that God was going to show that the people of Judah had everything. They had wine, they had houses, they had commercial exploits, they had everything that God could give a nation. And yet they were not a happy nation, and they were not a contented nation, and they were not sweet in their nature in that nation. You know, they really were rebellious. They really were hateful of God. And so he's going to show that happiness is not in things. Happiness is not in business. Happiness is not in human pleasure. Happiness is not in sensuality. Happiness is not having. You see, God ever intended that the nation of Israel should find its happiness in himself. Is it not in this particular book that we read words like these? Ye have hewn out to yourselves, cisterns that hold no water. He says, ye have left me the fountain of living water. Think about the system. Think about the fountain. You see, they prepared the one unto the other. And the prophet Jeremiah, so lovely in his ways, so cheerful, so prayerful, so watchful over his people, he preaches to them, and he appeals to them, and he tries to get through to them. And it would take evening to go through the things and the illustrations and the symbolism that he uses to try and get through to the people of God. You know, what the prophet is trying to bring them to is that their future blessing depends upon their present obedience. Their future blessing depends upon their present obedience. You know, good men in the meeting will not preserve it. Good teaching coming ever so regular will not preserve it. Unless there is within our own hearts and spirit an ever-increasing longing to be a sound obedient to the Lord, not for the sake of anything else, but just being obedient to Him, just bowing to His will, just accepting that His dictates are the best for us, and out west His revealed will is nothing but misery of heart and life. You know, Jeremiah is asked to do a thing that is not good for him either. You know, sometimes we're asked to do things. Take the Rechabites, bring them into the temple, and give them wine to drink. You know, this matter is really very, very serious. It's not as if God is encouraging the Rechabites to drink wine. That's not what I'm going to preach to you. But you know, here are a people. Here is a tribe. And it's under a test. It's under a test. And 300 years have rolled. I don't know how many generations are in 300 years. But 300 years have rolled. And not a man. And not a woman. And not a child has ever broken the desire or ever let down the legacy that's left by Jonadab, the son of Rechab. Now there's a little point I want to raise here. And it's this, that if you had been speaking to anybody in Judah, they would just say the commandments of the Lord are too stringent. Mm-hmm. And the way of the Lord is too narrow. But here are 300 years, and a family has proven that this matter, that obedience, is a matter that can be kept. And so Jeremiah the prophet is a witness, and some of his friends in the court of the chamber underneath where Huldah the prophetess lived. And there the best man in the city is there. And possibly the best wine is before them. And someone would say, why, if Jeremiah is offering it, surely it can't be wrong. And this wine, surely it's for nothing. You're not asked to buy it. You're just asked to take it. But here are people, possibly there's no books. No library, no great teacher, but there's one thing marked this tribe. They knew that their happiness and their bliss and their future depended upon a matter of obedience. Now I know that we could be obedient in the letter of the law and not have the spirit. Now, I appreciate that very, very much. But we must understand that God is wise. And God is right. By the way, God is right in everything. We possibly would like to think that God is right in some things, but until we come to the point where God is right in everything, then there'll never be any real happiness in the life. I was thinking, too, that if someone in our meeting were to leave a legacy like this to the meeting, I don't know if we would be thanked. Jonadab left a legacy to his family. You know, some people would like to leave a legacy to their family. Well, I give you a bit of advice. Don't leave your family any money. And don't leave the meeting any money. I'll tell you why, because they can use other people's money the way they wouldn't use their own. You see, sometimes, here's a family and they've lived 300 years. I never read once that they were hungry. I never read once that they were emaciated. I never read once that they were poor. I never read once that ever they begged from another tribe. You see, this legacy brought a kind of manhood and brought a character into this family. And it brought something that no other family round about had the likes of.
For the things that their father left them in the legacy, he knew was for their ultimate good. I wonder what we'll leave our local assembly. Will we leave a legacy of good? Will we leave a legacy of sound sculpture? Will we leave a legacy of enterprise on the gospel? I wonder what we'll leave. Let us see then the things that Jonadab left for his family. I noticed that the strictures were that they had not to touch wine. Now I judge that what he had in mind for them was that he wanted them to be sound in body and in mind. We all know, you see, that things that are intoxicating, they affect the beat of the spine, and thus they affect the thinking, and they affect the head, and they affect the matter of control. You know, he wanted them not only to be clear-sighted, but he wanted them to be clear-minded. He wanted them with a clear mind, a thinking mind. And he didn't want them to be intoxicated. He wanted all their thinking to be right, because if the thinking's not right, the actions will not be right, the speech will not be right, nothing will be right. And so, he did not even want them to taste of this wine. You know, he told them not to build a house. What is the idea behind that? Well, what he didn't want for his family was that they should have a thirst for position. He didn't want them to have a thirst for position. Now, you'll need a house to live in. You'll need a roof above your head. And you'll need as many rooms as you've got children. And you maybe want one for someone to come along. Well, you see, that's not what we're talking about. But what we are talking about is this, that he didn't want to see his family. He wanted to see them with clean bodies. He wanted to see them with clear minds. He wanted to see them with no bad habits. He wanted to see them in complete control of themselves. He didn't want them with an undue desire for possession. He didn't want to see them adding one place to another place. He didn't want them to be like the man in the gospel by Luke, for that's what Israel became, didn't it? I will tear down my barn and will build greater, greater. You know, the man in the gospel by Luke, he got so obsessed with things that he never even reckoned or gave thought to God. I want to speak slowly, because the more things that are added to you, the less time you generally have for God. Now, there are some exceptions. There are some exceptions, because Job has cattle and sheep and camels and houses and land, the likes of which you could never even imagine, and still he walked with God. Now, there are exceptions to every rule. But generally, when we get the obsession for things, then you'll find that that is the downward path for us. Sowing and reaping. Did not to sow, and did not to reap. What does this mean? Well, without sowing and reaping, you can't get multiplication. And you see, Jonadab wanted for his family, he wanted them with clean body, clear mind. He wanted them to have no commercial enterprises whatsoever, so that they don't get bogged down. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life. You know, that is the idea behind Jonadab. He says, I don't want you to be sowing and reaping. Why? Because if you sow and reap, there'll be a tremendous multiplication. You think about it. 1 year of corn. Think of what it produces the next year when it's put into the ground. It can yield 30 or 60. Or 100-fold. And so he says to them, I don't want you to be taken up with multiplication in that particular sense. You know, when he talks about that we have got to plant a vine, what is the idea there? Well, of course, he has told them not to taste wine, but to someone, why is he not to plant a vine? Well, you see, I don't know much about vines, but I do know this. and you can't get any real grapes off it for at least 4 years. And I know there's all the pruning to be done all the time, but the point that he's saying to them, I don't want you to be occupied with anything at all that settles you down here. I don't want you to be occupied with things that get you settled down here. Jonadab, what is he saying to his family? I want you to understand that as my family, you'll be born
as a pilgrim.
You'll live as a pilgrim. And you'll die as a pilgrim. And that is the idea when the idea of planting the vine. You see, it takes time to plant the vine. It takes years for it to come into any sense of fruition. And then there's another little thing added. But to dwell in tents. But to dwell in tents. What did he want for his family? Well, to someone in the hall, I'm sure you've come to this conclusion. He had no big ideas for his family. You know, I wrote with a man once, and his position was, and the house that went with his job was the house of the Master of Lorien. It's just below Newton Grange there. And once we got to know each other, I said to him, you never took that house. He said, no, he said, I have three girls. I didn't want to give them a false impression of life. That wasn't a Christian man. That was a worldly man. He didn't want to give them a wrong impression of life. But to dwell in tents. How beautiful it is, thinking of that. How beautiful it is that Rebecca went into Sarah, Isaac's mother's tent. How happy she was with the circumstances that she was brought into, but to dwell in tent. You know, when you're in a tent, all that's between you is a skin in heaven. That's all, just a skin in heaven. When you're in a tent, oh, I don't think there were little bivvies the way that you're thinking about them. Oh, no, there'd be vast tents, and there was different quarters in the tent, but that to dwell in tent. If the father wanted them nomadic, wanted them dependent, wanted them humble, wanted them modest, my judge of that is the legacy that he left them. I want to bring this other matter to you again, bring it back again to you, and hasten in the matter. That is, that you would think that when a prophet, and no mean prophet, by the way, because you remember that the Lord Jesus one day was likened unto Jeremiah the prophet. Some say thou art Elias, some say Jeremiah, or some say one of the prophets, but whom say ye that I am? And so you see, it's no mean prophet that is holding out to him the goblets of wine. And you know, people say today, how can it be wrong when he offers it? How can it be wrong when he does it? How can it be wrong when he says it? How can it be wrong? But you know, these men lived before God. These men, well, they would appreciate Jeremiah the prophet. These men had something, a conviction about them, about this matter. And to that, they would stand. You know, I was thinking of a present meeting, and I was thinking about the things that not only tonight, but tomorrow and Monday, and I'm thinking about the things that are offered to us. I'm not thinking about spirits or wine or nothing like that. I'm thinking about the normal day things in life. And you know, people will say, but you know, you go too far. You can go too far. Did you notice that the people that say that, their names are not in this chapter. But the Rechabites' names are in the chapter. Did you notice that all the men that built Babel, not one of their names are in the Bible? But Abram's name is in it. And people who is valuable before God, they're in it. And so what I'm saying to you is, there are people who say, oh, you know, it's a commercial thing. It's a business thing. You know, I had to go to the pastor. I had to go there. It's, you know, you can go too far. Somebody once said years ago, the best way to be balanced is God's will. The best way to be balanced is God's will. That is that you give God the benefit of the doubt in everything. And so, they live to obey and to please their Father. You know, some people think that to live to obey is rather restrictive. And it's very, very difficult. Well, there could be a negative side to that. But obedience is something that brings great happiness. Every man in the Bible that disobeyed brought misery upon himself. You know, you remember how that Samuel told Saul to obey. It's better than sacrifice. You know, what he's really saying to him is this. God would rather have obedience than getting up on your feet on Sunday morning. Do you believe that? To obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken to God than all the fat of rams. And so that is very, very telling, isn't it? We're not going through all that. You know, when a man wants to please God, there are things that are very, very, are a very bad taste to his mouth. There are things that are just counted as nothing once he sets his heart to please God. A place in Jerusalem, a place in the estimate of Jeremiah the prophet, a place in the city among all the others, that meant nothing to the children of Jonadab, the son of Rechab. All they left for was this, to obey and to please their father. That's all they lived for. They may have looked odd. Their clothes different from everyone else's. Their speech different. Their attitude's different. Let me repeat to you, if you've heard me say this before. In Vanity Fair, when Faithful and Pilgrim were going through, the men in the fair that were selling all the wares, crying, buy, 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 buy. The men in the fair had good eyes, and they saw three things about the two pilgrims. They saw they were not dressed like the other people in the fair. They saw they had no eyes for the wares that were in sale in the fair. And they hadn't the language of the men of the fair. They spoke a fair Emmanuel's language. And so I want to suggest to you tonight that these people would look different. And that is something. And we want to say we feel for the young people. And we feel for you tenderly. It is your honor to be different. It's your glory to be different. We don't want you to see in long coats or things like that. Or funeral, like a funeral undertaker. That's the last thing that's on our mind. But you know, there is a modesty. It's not maxi or mini, is it? Modesty is what the Bible teaches. And so we want to be in that way. You know, there's simple ways in life for a great rebuke to the people of Judah. How strange it is in life that we admire modesty. How strange it is that we admire other people's humble living. How strange it is that we make remarks that people are so content with so little. How strange that we just think that these things are for admiration. How strange it never comes into our hearts that they are for us to practice. What does the Lord desire of thee? But to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy glory. Jonadab wanted no high ideas for his family. He wanted them to be happy pilgrims in their passage through life. There's something else I wanted you to see, not only that obedience is a matter that can be done and practiced, but I noticed that not touching line the truth is not necessary for life. You know, people say, I must live. The Bible says you must die. There's something I can't do without that. The Bible proves that you can do without that. The Bible proves that obedience is possible. The Bible teaches that the sensual desires of life can all be brought into subjection and they drank no wine. You know, these men didn't know whether this was a life or death question. They didn't know whether it was a job question. They didn't know whether it was losing their post question. But there's one thing they made up their mind. Whether they lived or died, they will not disobey Jonadab, their father. So very, very important to get that. I'm about to close, but you know, Judah was surrounded by vineyards.
Surrounded by vineyards.
There was vineyards in abundance. Did it make them happy? Not only so. Had they goodly houses in Jerusalem? The Bible speaks about the goodly houses in Jerusalem. And there's no happiness. Olive yards, vineyards, goodly houses, but no happiness. Just wondering about ourselves today. I'm thinking about the sowing of the seed that they sowed. It was like gravel in their mouth. It was like gravel in their mouth. The seed went to corruption. Who bearded we mold? Or they weren't happy. Not only so, vineyards. I'm thinking of that verse. Is it in Hosea? It says about the drink of the reaper. You know, God never ever prohibited them from taking the wine of the vineyard, but they became the drunk of the Ephraim. That was the biggest tribe in the whole of Israel, of Ephraim. And eventually they were known as the drunk of the Ephraim. You see, they abused the God-given thing that God had given. God never denied it to them, but they abused it. Oh, how sad. What reflection. Let me go over the four things before I sit down. Go away. You know, we do believe that drugs are a great scourge. We really believe there's nothing sadder than to see people under the influence of them. But you know, drink is a great scourge as well. It would be better if we just step and think off our table. Don't even go near the vineyards of Timnah. No wine. Something else. Building houses. There never was a greater temptation in our day as this matter of building houses, of adding and building. You know, these things are very, very relevant, aren't they? You know, people have been buying houses down in the south there. They paid about 50,000 for them. Now they're selling them at 150,000. I heard a man saying 2-3 weeks ago, I wish I had half a dozen of them to sell. I don't know what he would do with it all anyway, but still, you can see the feeling in the hearts of the people. So you see, if ever there a commercial deal like this, if ever there a commercial deal like this, everyone is trembling, you know, on the stock exchange. Everyone is scrambling, wondering about the shares. I hope there's not too many people worrying about shares in this hall. I hope not. Oh, that none of these things should move us. Planting vineyards, great, great expansive programs. Think about all these things. What a relevant one to this day. Think about the Rechabite. Think about how odd they look, plain they look, ordinary, and yet God lifted them up to show to his people that happiness is not in things. Happiness is not in things. It's not in houses. It's not in owning. It's not in any of these things. The sons of Jonadab were exceedingly happy without all these things.